Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What up? It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. We've got a bit of a lull in the free agent market in the offseason period. Kevin Durant is still a Brooklyn Net. That might have something to do with said lull and the lack of activity in recent days. Seems like the market's kind of locked up until everybody figures out where Durant is going. But there is still plenty of offseason fun to analyze. And for that, I wanted to bring back my old friend, the coach, David Thorpe. He is, of course, a partner and analyst over at True Hoop, where he works with Henry Abbott. They do great work. Go subscribe to them if you're not already over at Substack. Coach Thorpe, also a longtime trainer of NBA players and NBA prospects. He runs the Pro Training Center down in Clearwater, Florida. No one I respect more in all matters basketball, so we dove into some of the bigger moves of this summer so far. How will Rudy Gobert fit with Karl-Anthony Towns in Minnesota? What's the Wolves' ceiling now? Can the Jazz rebuild around Donovan Mitchell? Or is it time to move on, hit the reset button, and send him off somewhere? Is that somewhere New York, where Knicks fans have been clamoring for him? Would Mitchell make sense next to Jalen Brunson? And speaking of newly acquired point guards, and to re-spark a debate that Mannix and I had on the crossover earlier this week, should Malcolm Brogdon be handed the starting point guard duties in Boston? Coach Thorpe has an opinion on that and everything else that I just mentioned. Always very insightful. A lot of great analysis to come. Before we get to all that, a quick reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts, and hit me with all your feedback on Twitter at Howard Beck. Okay, my conversation with the coach, David Thorpe, is coming up next, so stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now pleased to be joined by the only person I actually call coach. Coach David Thorpe. Coach, I call you coach. I refuse to call NBA coaches coach because I just call them by their name. I'm not a player for them. I'm not a player for you either. Why am I calling you coach? I think it's just out of respect for our friendship and my respect for your knowledge. That doesn't mean I don't respect NBA coaches. I don't know. But how are you, coach? It's good to see you.
I will tell you, it's next to dad. It's like my favorite word. You are welcome to call me David. It's interesting. I have former players that are in their 50s now. I'm 57. I started coaching when I was 22. And I always feel at my heart when they still refer to me as coach. And if they don't, it's okay. I don't mind. But thank you, Howard. And I'm doing fine. Thank you very much.
Well, it's great to see you. I also realized as I was pinging you over the last couple of days to see if we could arrange this that I have not had you on the podcast since my last podcast, the Full 48, which has been a couple of years. So this was overdue to get you back in the rotation. I appreciate you doing this. I know you're doing obviously all your own stuff over at True Hoop and making the rounds other places. So I always appreciate when you can spend a little time with us.
Always happy to talk to you, Howard. You know that.
I appreciate that. I want to jump right in on the one blockbuster trade that has happened, because there's the other one that hasn't. And we'll get to Kevin Durant eventually sometime in this conversation. But I want to talk about Rudy Gobert, because a lot has been discussed, analyzed, debated in the days since the Jazz made that deal. And you had a pretty interesting take on it yourself over at True Hoop. But I want to get into it this way. I want to start with this. Forget the investment that the Timberwolves made in Rudy Gobert. I don't care about, for the moment, for the sake of argument, the players they sent out, the picks, the contract, all of those things are the things that we evaluate with when we evaluate NBA trades, for good reason, because the fit or the contracts matter, and what you, how much you expended to get a guy matters. But I want to start with your specialty, which is simply basketball fit, basketball skills, and just looking at, and this is the things that you wrote about the other day at True Hoop, Gobert as a fit next to Towns, next to Anthony Edwards, for the moment D'Angelo Russell in their system. How good a fit is Rudy Gobert with the Timberwolves? As I say, everything else to the side, just the basketball.
Well, I guess because I'm a coach, I do see things through these eyes. And we'll see how Chris Finch does. It's on him. I wrote in the article that it's a bet. This move's really a bet on Anthony Edwards. That, you know, if he becomes the dynamic Dwayne Wade, Donovan Mitchell type player, this move's going to look better. It's never going to look great for the reasons you don't want to talk about, because obviously it's a lot of capital. It's a lot to offer too much. I don't think there's any question of that.
Yes.
I agree with everyone who's assessed it that way, that it's just too much for him. But I have been writing a True Hoop, as you might know, for a while now on you don't have to go small because everyone else is going small. And so we saw Phoenix find ways to get two centers on the court frequently. And that's not why they lost game 7 against Dallas. We saw Boston change their season by sticking with Robert Williams and old ass Al Horford. And in my opinion, if Jason Tatum doesn't just run out of gas and the team just flopped really one quarter, I think they had a great shot. They were the better team, I thought. Warriors deserved to win, don't get me wrong. But Tatum was just done. Maybe he doesn't play Team USA last summer. Maybe he doesn't run out of gas so fast. But that double big lineup was a season changer for them and maybe a franchise changer. You don't have to go small. You can. It depends on who you have. The Warriors, if you remember, were sitting Looney and going into their pivotal game 6 in Memphis. No, that was at home, I think. Because I think Memphis had the home court. Yeah. Klay Thompson, I believe, and Steph Curry went to their coach and said, we need Kevon in the starting lineup. And he was a monster for them, along with Draymond, as their bigs. Obviously, they're not that big. And Kevon played well in the NBA Finals, too. So, and Robert Williams, and I know you're going to ask me this question, so I'm going to fast forward it quickly because you need to address it. The regular season, the postseason are sometimes two different things. They don't have to be. In Game 6 in the NBA Finals, and I might be wrong, I believe Horford, I think, played like 39 minutes and Robert Williams played 33 only because he had been injured. And if Robert Williams had a positive plus minus for this series, that's something people forget about. Tatum was exhausted, but when Robert Williams was on the court, the Celtics were the better team. And he was really limited with injury. And you don't apologize for it if you're Golden State, that's part of the game. But in their closeout game, lose and you're done, those guys played over 70 minutes. So yeah, Gobert and Towns can play well together. You've got to scheme that up, Howard. Chris Finch, I wrote this in the article the other day that you referenced. There are, you go to Amazon and just Google, post schemes in the NBA or post schemes in basketball and YouTube clips. There are teams and there are books that know how to use two bigs. And when one of them is the best dunker in the league, which Gobert is almost every year, and the other is maybe the best shooting big of all time to include Dirk Nowitzki, which is a hell of a statement to make, but it's true. There's no shortage of things they can do. And now you throw in that dynamic wing and the skilled high level reading IQ point guard and D'Angelo for as you said, for now is there. Oh yeah. They can play together on both sides without question and can be really good on both ends because of it.
I have a small objection on the best shooting big man of all time thing with Towns. I think like this is splitting hairs because I want to protect Dirk on some level because I love Dirk. And I just think that Towns, so here's the thing. Until Towns does it in the playoffs and in meaningful playoff games deeper in the playoffs, I'm not going to give him that title, personally. He might technically be. The numbers might say he is. Plenty of people might agree that he is, and it's fine. I am personally holding out until he has the meaningful shots, right? If you want to be the best shooting whatever, then you have to do it when it matters more. And maybe that's only partially on Towns, whatever. It's fine. I'm like, this is just a little like old man, shaking fist at clouds moment for me where it's just like, no, I'm not ready to give it to him. I understand. He shoots really, really well, especially from three. Okay. Dirk did it at the highest level at the most important time. So that it's a slight tangent, but I'm that's my little nitpick.
So you fell for the bait, Howard. I could not agree with you more. And that's my point. He's in the conversation. Choose Dirk all you want. I get it. But no one else is in that conversation. There's just Dirk. But this guy's in the conversation. Yeah. And so,
and even if he's the second best of all time, that's still pretty freaking good. So
my point is, Chris Finch will never run out of ideas on how to play the guy who leads the league in dunks every year. And by the way, the league has Giannis Antetokounmpo, who's always number two. So we know he can still dunk and will be for quite a while. He's very comfortable in that role with what Cat can do to spread the floor. There's just, I mean, they can add 10 new plays a week if they wanted to and whittle down as you get to the postseason, their top five, top seven, whatever. They can do so much. And then, of course, defensively, and I know you're going to ask this, Howard, about staying on the floor again. The Warriors' offensive rating against the Celtics would have been maybe bottom 10 in the league had it been that way for the whole regular season, right around there. Boston didn't lose that series because they couldn't guard the best small ball lineup in the league. There's no reason why Minnesota can't do that. In fact, I think Karl-Anthony Towns can get better. And Anthony Edwards should be a stud on defense. And Jaden McDaniels is young, but can be an absolute stud on defense. They've got to do some work. Last year, they kind of did it with, they blitz ball screens. They trap more. They created some chaos. You can do that with Rudy, much more so than with Kat as your five, because he can bail you out more. Not every time, but more. Utah, I thought, had some structural flaws in how they defended and made Rudy look worse than what he really is. It would be a mistake for Minnesota not to study film on what Utah did and rather didn't do defensively and then avoid those things with Rudy in Minnesota.
Real quick on that, and I want to get to the idea about whether or not, Rudy, quote unquote, gets played off the court and can't play in the playoffs and small ball, messing with them. When you say that there were some, I can't remember the phrase you just used was structural issues or whatever. Yeah. Is it a Quinn Snyder issue or a roster issue that they had in Utah that made Gobert maybe more vulnerable or that also just made them so incredibly reliant on him, right? Because the thing I always think about with the Jazz is they just simply didn't have enough wing defense or backcourt defense. Seemed like everything was going to be on Rudy, and it doesn't necessarily have to be that way in Minnesota. So is it about personnel or was that about the way Quinn Snyder deployed him?
Oh, I thought it was without question. It was scheme. I think their current management is not very good, but I don't blame them. And it was Dennis Lindsay's roster 2 years ago. I mean, guys, Howard, 2 years ago, Utah was the best team in the world. They, in my opinion, they would have won the championship if Conley's healthy and Mitchell's healthy. This is the game. Injuries are part of it. But they were the best team. Their net rating was up there with some of the better Warriors teams. They were marvelous and just were not healthy when it mattered. But if you think about this final series, we were at 2-2 and almost 3-1 Boston if they don't just die in that one. And Curry, of course, was amazing. And Boston elected to let Steph Curry shoot as many threes as he wanted. He took 51 threes the first four games. That was more threes in the first four games than any postseason he played in. All the series this year. And there's other three series he played 5 and 6 games and didn't take 51 threes. And yet it could have been 3-1 Boston. Utah overreacted to trying to take away threes, knowing that Rudy was going to hustle back. And because of it, there were a lot more full-speed downhill straight-line drives. And Rudy just couldn't guard all the space. There's no reason why you have to freak out every time someone's open for three. You can close them out with an early, what we call early high hand contest. Know your spots well. Target who you want to close out hotter on than others, and give Rudy a chance not to have to run around like a crazy person to protect the rim the way we know he's capable of doing. Still the best at it, and maybe the best. He's top two defender, maybe all time, in my opinion, maybe the best of all time. That because he is able to guard so much space, but that was asking for too much for what Utah did.
So when we have these debates, in the last couple springs in particular, Rudy got exposed in the playoffs. He got played off the court by the Clippers, by some other teams. I guess the way I would put it to you, and I think this is the question I'd sent you, is like true, false, or partly true? And related to that, then, are the Wolves going to now have difficulty with small ball lineups? Are they going to be in critical times next spring choosing between Cat at the five or Rudy at the five?
Yeah. I think Quinn Snyder is a hell of a coach, and I think he'll get hired very quickly. And if he wants to, he can take a year off. He's allowed that. But he was not a good postseason coach, in my opinion. He did not adjust. And I think throughout the years, they've done a very poor job of making teams pay for switching. And Rudy Gobert is not a great low post player. That is not relevant to this discussion. There are so many things you can run, going back to what I was saying before about the Amazon books you can get on Amazon, on YouTube, everywhere. There are so many things you can do to take advantage of the ability to dunk the ball against little guys. I put one little gif in the article we wrote the other day where for Team France, they played four round one. They got a little guard to switch on Rudy. Rudy worked him over. The little guard flopped because he had no chance to guard him, and Rudy got a dunk. And that little guard was Marcus Smart for Team USA, our defensive player of the year right now. And little should be in quotes. There's nothing little about that dude. Brian Scalabrine has said, I've heard him on NBA radio, that the reason why the Celtics are big is because their point guard is Marcus Smart. Now, it helps to have 2 7-footers more or less in the game too. But Rudy Gobert can do that against anyone. Fight like crazy. You have to run actions. We call them duck-ins or seals. There's different things you can do with that gigantic man pulverizing teams, including playoff teams who frequently, I mean, Jordan Poole has no chance to guard Rudy Gobert at the rim. None. You've got to run some schemes to create that. If you don't get it, it's because they're choosing not to switch. That's fine. Now you can take advantage of Jordan a different way or whoever else you're going up against. There's still plenty of little guys that play in this league that are because they're quick and they're good shooters, whatever. You just can't throw in the low post to them like you can Cat. Yeah. So I think you'll see some staggered action if I was them. And this is where I think they messed up a little bit trading Walker Kessler, who I think led the country in block shots last year, right? One of the top ones for Auburn, Jabari Smith's teammate. It'd have been nice to develop another shot blocker to go along with Rudy, but you should have a 7-footer in the game at all times, pretty much. And I'm not a big believer, Howard, that it's up to the current players to teach the younger players, but there's no law against it. Cat can never be Rudy Gobert, let's be fair. Nor do you want him to be. He's his own great player. But he can learn some lessons from Rudy. He's a long dude, too. There's a skill to Rudy Gobert. It's not just long and tall and all of that. There's a timing and a skill and a reading that I would think Rudy's one of the last big men we have that has embraced that role and doesn't just want to be a shooter. DeAndre Ayton wants to be like Cat. That's how most big guys are. Chet Holmgren is talking about being Kevin Durant. Rudy embraces the old school center position. I think he can teach Cat an awful lot, in my opinion, and improve him. And now when Rudy gets his rest, Cat can do better. Not great, but better than what he's been before.
Do you think that it's funny. One of our other articles of faith, when we talk about the Jazz in the last 5 years, when we talk about Rudy Gobert is a walking top five defense. And I think they were 10th in defensive efficiency, the Jazz, this past season. Rudy paid a little bit of a price for that in some of the postseason award voting and everything else. And whether that was about him eroding a little bit or maybe just their, as a team, them eroding a little bit. And, you know, like they were... There's a reason you break up a tandem as they did at this stage anyway. These things tend to have a lifespan in the NBA. 5 years is a long time in NBA franchise life. So I don't know if how much of that is on him. Did you see any erosion at all in Rudy this past season? Do you agree with the idea that he's a walking top five defense? Is that what the Timberwolves will now be? Because offensively, clearly, they have a ton of firepower. And in fact, on day one, Anthony Edwards and Carl Anthony Towns, to say nothing of D'Angelo Russell, because again, I don't know where he'll end up, if he'll stay or not. But just Anthony Edwards and Towns alone, no offense to the Jazz, but that's better than anything Rudy has been surrounded by in the course of his career. So what would you expect as you're trying to project out on July 7th as we sit here?
For Rudy fitting in their offense?
First of all, what Rudy does for the Timberwolves defense just by being Rudy.
Yeah.
In that, again, they've been at best an average defense, and as you noted, it took a lot of machinations just to create that last season. Right. Are they a top five defense with him on day one? And offensively, might they get a little more out of him than a Jazz offense that, to your point, maybe didn't find creative ways or advantageous ways to use him at times?
Yeah, I like both questions. So they've got a chance to be a top five defense. McDaniels has to play more. Edwards has to keep improving. I will remind you of something. When Phoenix traded for Shaq and ended the 7 seconds or less Nash Suns, I have a good friend who was on the staff, and I spoke to him. What are you guys doing? You have the sexiest team in sports amongst all sports. What are you doing? He said, this was after the season, we got worn down having a double so often inside. And I think Mike, more than I spoke to D'Antoni last month, I didn't ask him about this, but I will next time I speak to him. They felt like we're just getting too tired because of all the scrambling we're having to do defensively, which is how Minnesota played last year. They elected to double, not because of lack of size, Cat's huge, because of how they played and the lack of good defensive players in the other spots and young players. They won't have to do that this year nearly as often. They can play more square, we call it, less gambling. They can choose to gamble, pick your spots. Nothing wrong with that. You don't have to do it all the time because you've got that guy. Just like Robert Williams. So Ime Udoka took Robert Williams every game, pretty much, and asked him to guard the other team's least threatening offensive player, whoever that would be, any position. So you can leave more frequently without worrying about your guy. We'll scramble around if your guy goes to the rim, whatever, and protect everyone else in the paint. I think that's exactly what, if I'm Chris Finch, whom I know is a smart guy, I mean, he's probably watching a lot of Milwaukee Bucks tape, and he's watching a hell of a lot of Boston Celtics tape on, okay, when you've got that guy, how best should we play? And you can watch tape from a couple of years ago when the Jazz were the best defensive team. I think they got so good offensively, it kind of sucked away their identity. I'm a big believer in identity mattering in the postseason. It kind of helps glue you. We always talk about glue guys. Identity can be glue also. And I think this is going to help Minnesota, who can easily tip into the offensive side as a glue team. And, I mean, look at Golden State. We all are enamored with their – we call it the Cuisinart of true hoop, and Steph Curry is Steph Curry. But this is an identity-first defense dynasty. And that's how they won this last series. They did it pragmatically when they realized that Boston's just way too big for us. They flooded the paint with bodies. They have no size. It was just bodies. And they clogged the lane, and the Celtics were stubborn, and they kept trying to get the first, I call it the first box, the first 8 feet or so around the rim. They just kept going to the first box and throwing up trash or turning the ball over. But Golden State can pivot when that's their identity. They're not having a pull out of a hat. No, this is how they think of themselves. And I think Minnesota has just created a new identity for themselves. And Rudy is the picture of that, as he should be.
So the thing we can never account for in this league, right, especially when stars are traded, and Rudy's a different kind of star, right? He's a defense-first guy.
Yep.
We can't account for chemistry and how guys click and gel and all these other cliches we use. So we can't know that. Probably an easier, more seamless fit than a lot of guys. He's not a guy you have to worry about. Is he going to get his 18 to 20 shots a game? Is he going, you don't have to create offensive schemes. Like, he sort of is plug and play as an elite defender. He should fit just about anywhere, I would think. All that said, he's a new element that they're introducing. Towns now shifts over. Anthony Edwards, is ever evolving as young stars do. What's your sense of the ceiling here? And the reason the ceiling becomes important, of course, is back to all the stuff I didn't want to talk about on this particular podcast. They gave up a shit ton to get him. A bunch of players and a bunch of picks. There's 10 different elements they gave up. And he's got a massive contract that they're now on the hook for. A contract that a contract that a lot of people in the NBA would say for a center with no offensive or limited offensive skills, you wouldn't want to invest in, right? We're in a time when the best investment in a center is, going and picking up a Kevon Looney for, whatever, 9, 10 million, 12 yeah. million, a Mitchell Robinson, somebody else. Investing 25, 30, 40 million, and he tops out over 40 million. That is not considered in today's NBA a great investment unless you've got Joel Embiid or Jokic.
Right.
So eventually it's going to be about that equation. Was it the right outlay if you can't win a championship? So, and I have a thought on the championship thing too, but where do you see them as of right now? As constructed, given what we know about the competition atop the West, does this put the Timberwolves in the mix to at least make a run to the conference finals? Are they in the finals discussion already, automatically? Like how close are they?
So the first part of what you're talking about, which is the value of his game, you may know this, Howard. We partner with Taylor Snar at Dunson3s.com and Steve Ilardi, really brilliant neuroscientist, psychologist, clinical psychologist, and data science guy, and created a stat called bonus wins, which is kind of like earned the earned wins you see, the win share, all that kind of thing,
yeah.
But you value in contract. So the ideal is to have a player that wins a lot more than what he's being paid to. And there's a whole math behind it. You already mentioned Embiid and Jokic. They are incredibly well-paid guys and are still out-earning that contract significantly so, as is players on rookie deals like Ja Morant and LaMelo and so forth, because they're just not paid nearly as much. It's hard, to your point, when you get to Rudy's age and salary and they're earning that money. They're earning the same amount of wins that they should be for that salary. Whereas Westbrook, disastrous. Okay. Rudy's not disastrous. You're just paying a ton of money for those dollars. And that's a problem going forward over the years. But the question of whether they're contenders, at Troop, we call it the championship bus. And I think they're on the championship bus. They need some breaks, like most teams do. I don't think they're the best team on paper. I don't care. I just don't care. The idea that we know who's going to be in the finals is so ridiculous. You and I have been friends for a long time. I've been trying to project this game since 07, I joined ESPN. And it doesn't mean we can't see on paper who's the best team. It just doesn't matter. When does that team stay healthy all year? They don't. It doesn't happen. So could Minnesota not make the playoffs this year? Sure. It's not likely, considering they're better than last year, as are the Lakers probably, the Clippers for sure, Denver almost for sure. There's a few others, as we know. Utah probably drops unless they pull a deal. I think they're on the bus. They may not be in first class. They might be in coach. But as I wrote in my piece the other day, going through a season over the time is like putting. You got to get the pace right. They've got to get their coaching right. They've got to get a little lucky. And they're on the green. They got a chance. I tell you what, if they get by round one as a top four seed, which is absolutely possible, and they play, let's say, the Warriors in round two, or the Grizzlies in round two, and you tell me John Morant doesn't play like he didn't against the Warriors after three games, or Curry hurts his ankle, of course Minnesota can win that series. And now they're in the conference finals. And while you and I both agree that they paid too much, I think they did, for this deal, tell the Minnesota fans who have not seen a series win, I believe, since 04 with KG.
Yes.
This is a franchise changer that way. And they're going to go through the desert later on, but they're going to drink a lot of water these next 4 years. And they got more deals they can do. When you start winning, good things can happen. And they better develop their players. They better, the few draft picks that they get, they better hit home runs. Robert Williams went 27. Kevon Looney went 30. Jordan Poole went in the 20s. Grant Williams went 21. Like, these are not lottery picks, and they're pivotal postseason performers. So this is where I think coaching and franchising culture matter a lot too.
Yeah. And as I mentioned in my earlier episode of the crossover earlier this week with Maddox, you know, I kind of like, you know, I've just got a faith in maybe a blind faith in Tim Connelly. He did such a great job in Denver. I know this was a big swing. It's an audacious swing, and he gave up a lot to do it. Like this takes a lot of conviction. This is a pretty bold move. And so when you talk about culture and the other team players are going to add along the way, the things they'll do along the way to create the kind of culture to have us perceive Minnesota differently and have them have a different kind of trajectory. Like I have faith in Connelly and his group to get them there. And I'll also say this, because you mentioned it, they've won like two playoff series in their entire existence in 33 years, and they were both in 2004.
Yeah.
To an extent, I don't care if they ever make the finals with this group. Timberwolves fans can care and should care. But if this gets them a 3 to 5 year run of being top four in the West, of making some deep playoff runs, of winning some series period since they have so few in their history, and of maybe, who knows, as you say, things just sometimes break your way. And then the next thing you know, you wake up and you're in the NBA Finals with a chance to win a championship. If they never win a championship, and if they never even get to the finals, a 3 to 5 year window of being one of the best teams in the NBA, I think is worth it. We can argue about whether or not they should have negotiated differently or maybe held back one piece or, you know, whatever. When you're the Minnesota Timberwolves and you have the history that they do and the lack of history they do, I think the bar is then lower, and we can't make everything championship or bust for everybody. I'll also say this as a last thought before we move on from Minnesota. There's a few teams that are definitively ahead of them, given health on day one, right? The Warriors, the Clippers, the Nuggets, maybe Phoenix. We don't know where Ayton ends up. We don't know if they get up with KD or not, but Phoenix is kind of in flux. So there's three teams that are the only ones that I would say are definitely ahead of them are the Nuggets, Clippers, and Warriors. And then there's all these teams battling in the second tier. And everybody's got asterisks. Everybody's got some sort of what if going into a season. It's not crazy to see the Timberwolves breaking into the top four even next season. And then you start looking at age and injury issues with some of these teams. It's not that far-fetched to say that 2 or 3 years down the road, Minnesota may have the edge over some of the teams we've been talking about. So I like it. I like it. I can't wait to see it. I can't wait to see what it looks like and how, you know, some of these some of the things that we've been talking about today in just terms of fit work out. But I love it. All right, let's quickly move to the Utah part of this. I feel like the I don't want to crib from our buddy Winhurst, who is going to be memed to death for the rest of time. And I'm loving all of them. They're awesome. But the thing is that he raised in that now famous meme was, oh, Royce O'Neal, why is that so interesting? Well, and a few hours later, we learned why, because they traded Rudy Gobert. But they still have Donovan Mitchell. And I'd say that to add on to what Wendy was saying, or to echo it, even if you thought you were keeping Donovan Mitchell, I think you might still want Royce O'Neal. Now, the other things could come into play, contracts and everything else, but I still feel like Utah's in a position where no matter what signals are being sent out about Donovan Mitchell, they don't want to trade him, they want to rebuild around him. I have doubts, and I have doubts at least in part because of the same thing that Wendy raised famously a week ago about what trading Royce O'Neal for a pick meant. But let me start with this. Let's say they keep him. Can the Jazz be a contender with Donovan Mitchell as their best player?
Absolutely. And I saw Wendy's thing too, Brian's thing. It wasn't a secret. Everyone has been talking about Rudy Gobert trade for a month. Every agent phone call I've had who have players that are centers calling me about this is how I typically talk to agents. They'll call me, what do you think my guy fits in best, whatever. And they're all saying the same thing. Well, we got to see where Rudy goes. Like, he was gone. I've never thought they would trade Donovan Mitchell. It doesn't mean I'm right. I have no idea. They just got some good players. They've got a couple. Jared Vanderbilt's a good player. Malik Beasley's a good player. They've got Walker Kessler, could be a good player. He's not there now, with promise going forward. And they've got good players. Mike Conley was not great last year. He was the year before. And Donovan Mitchell is one of the best postseason scorers that I've ever watched as an analyst for the league. He's incredible. Just an incredible player as a scorer. He needs help defensively. And Mike was able more so than he is now as he's aged. I don't know what the new owner is going to do. this is what new owners like to do. Hello. That's what Minnesota just had. New owners getting their, you know, their feet wet a little bit. I think Utah should be in buy mode. I don't think Hassan Whiteside's the answer at center.
No.
I personally thought Royce O'Neal was overrated. I thought he was not the defender everyone thought he was the last 2 years. He had a couple good offensive games, but I don't have the metric in front of me, but I don't recall many games where I thought, boy, he's a confident player out there. He had a couple. And so I don't think that was such a big deal. And Howard, they've got capital to make trades now.
They do.
You don't got to do it now. You can wait. If they could go five, I would argue that they would go 5 years. They trade Donovan. They'll go 5 years and not draft a more dynamic scorer than Donovan Mitchell, who's young. So by all, he can definitely be the best player. He can't be the only all-star you have. You have to have some dynamic defenders and more help offensively too. The new system they'll run, you know, Quinn's offense really became a beautiful thing to watch. I do think it took away from their identity a little bit. I think Quinn struggled to really make that happen. And then whatever was going on between Donovan and Rudy wasn't a secret. Long before COVID, Rudy can be, having talked to one Jazz player in particular over the years who loves Rudy, but he can be challenging to really be close with. But the player that I talked to loved him just because of what he did defensively.
Yeah.
And because he might have complained some off the court, but on the court, he played his role. He really played his role very well. I think Donovan's the typical superstar. He has his moments like everyone else, but he's just impossible to guard. He's so explosive and powerful and has learned to shoot and score. So Utah's in an interesting position. They might decide 25 games in to pivot, and they've got plenty of pivots. Boy, they have a lot of options. They can reload or they can rebuild. It's their choice.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with all of that. And but that's when I look at them, once you've removed Rudy from this, whatever the tensions that existed between Rudy and Donovan Mitchell, the fact is they wanted a pretty high level in the regular season during their time together. They had their moments. And you absolutely have taken a step back as of right now. I look at the West right now. I'm not sure that the Jazz make the playoffs. As great as Donovan Mitchell is, as wonderful as some of the players that they've just acquired are, they don't. It's not a functional unit as of right now. And if we were going to talk about Rudy as being a walking top five, top 10 defense, well, that it just walked out the door. So they're not a top 10 defense right now as I glance at the roster. And because of that, Donovan Mitchell may at some point lose patience, right? Like this is the story of today's NBA. How long until your superstar says, I don't see it. Time for me to go. Unless you're Bradley Beal or Damian Lillard, who apparently are going to, you know, be with their franchises till the end of time. Most guys at some point hit a breaking point and get a little impatient, and justifiably, I'm not even blaming them for that, and say it's time to go somewhere else. This looks like at least, if not a teardown, it is a massive pivot. And I think the real question maybe is less about whether Danny Ainge sees a path to rebuilding around Donovan Mitchell with all the new toys that he has, all the picks and players, but maybe more about whether or not Donovan Mitchell sees the same thing. And if he asks out, and in today's NBA, even if you've got multiple years left on your deal, if you ask out, you tend to get your wish. So it sounds like you would hang on to him and use your new tools on the fly to rebuild on around him on the fly. If he did get traded, look, I'm in New York, and all the buzz here still, even after the signing of Jalen Brunson, is Knicks fans clamoring for a true star. And Mitchell has been tied to them for years because of his New York ties, his CAA ties, all the usual stuff. I have my own thought on this, but I'll throw it at you. Does a Jalen Brunson, Donovan Mitchell backcourt make sense? Forget what the Knicks might have to give up to get him or if they can get him, but does that make sense to you?
It does if Tom Thibodeau is not the coach. Mm. Yeah. I mean, it's not my favorite pairing. I like contrast more. I think they're more similar than different. And they're of similar build in the sense that both are little in this league.
Yeah.
But, Brunson is, they're both at best average defensively, probably a little below average elite. They're both absolutely elite offensively. We saw what Jalen can do when Luka wasn't playing, especially. There's a reason why they paid him that money. And I believe I don't know Jalen Brunson, but from what I've heard, unbelievable culture guy. And I think culture really matters. As you,
I heard that from the beginning, by the way, with him in Dallas from day one, people there were raving about Jalen.
Yeah, right. So I think they absolutely can play together, and they'd be smart to try to add Donovan to that.
Yeah,
because he is this superlative talent. Having Mitchell Robinson helps. They do need, they're going to need defensive help. You're not just going to outscore people. I just don't love the fit with Thibodeau. I thought he was great years ago as a defensive coordinator and then for the Bulls, but I don't feel that way anymore. Things can always change. I don't love a Julius Randle either. So to me, until they solve that problem, adding a high powered scoring guard is a little problematic. I'd probably see first how I can kind of move on from Julius, unless you think you've unlocked how he can play or change the way he plays some. But absent that, I don't love the fit then. But next to Brunson, he'd be fine.
Yeah, I guess my concern there, if I had one, and I think I mentioned this on the previous episode this week, just the idea that that's an undersized backcourt, is that too much kind of like what the Blazers were dealing with for years with Lillard and McCollum, which they've now done again with Lillard and Anthony Simons. Just the idea that that might put a ceiling on you because defensively you're now challenged, and by both by size and by the two guards not being defensive-minded guys. I also would just wonder, too, like if you're Jalen Brunson, like you left the Luka Doncic orbit so that you could create your own orbit and run your own team, and then now you're going to have another ball-dominant guy coming in. That's more of a Knicks Jalen Brunson thing than it is whether or not it's a logical way forward for the Knicks to truly get back into playoff contention. But, you know, stars make this league run, and Brunson's good, but he's not a star, and Mitchell is. So,
right. But let me ask you, Howard, I know it's your show, but let me ask you a quick question. You know New York basketball better than I do, although I did read Blood in the Garden, so I'm more informed than I used to be. That was great. Chris did a great job.
Herring's the best.
The idea that New York, it's my favorite city in this country pretty much, so I love the city. But the Knicks are trash. They're garbage. They're not a good basketball franchise. When's the last playoff series? We've been trashed in Minnesota, fairly so. Sacramento is the worst franchise. When's the last series the Knicks won? I don't know.
It was 2013, I think.
Okay.
It's been long enough that even though I live here and used to cover this team right. regularly, I actually have to think about it when you bring it up, and I'm actually clicking madly on Basketball Reference just to check. Last playoff appearance was 2021, lost in the first round. Yeah, 2013. Right. I was right. 2013 is when they lost to the Pacers in the second round, so I did at least remember correctly. That's a long time. That's 9 years.
Right. So to your point, if indeed it's true that ultimately the diminutive backcourt of Brunson and Mitchell will prevent them from winning a championship, who freaking cares? It's going to greatly improve the team. They're going to be relevant. I picked against the Knicks 2 seasons ago in round one. I thought Atlanta would beat them, and they did. I think I even picked in 6 games. I actually like management. I think they're trying to do things the right way. I have no criticism of that. I'm rooting for RJ very much so. He was one of my 5 players to kind of hope to break out this year when I wrote a preseason article last year. But if they can get into the second round, congratulations. You have the same, they should have the same aspirations as Minnesota and nothing more.
Yeah. Because you have the history that you have, or at least recent history, and just being relevant again perennially should be enough, or at least it's a nice thing to aspire to, and then you make the next step from there, right? One thing at a time. First become good again. Yeah,
and give luck a chance to happen.
Sure.
I mean, who was picking Boston in December? Like, you got to give luck a chance to happen.
Sure.
And there's so many good teams, and there's so many injuries because of all these games these guys played growing up. That's a whole different story. So be relevant. As I said, our championship bus, I imagine, is going to be the biggest bust. Last year was the biggest bust we had in a while. And it's going to be, and a three seed won the championship. I think it's going to be even bigger this year. And for New York to get on the bus would be great. Be great for the league to have that, but they're not on the bus now.
Everybody always says that, but the league has done pretty well without the Knicks being good in a long time. So I don't know. I'm glad you brought up the Celtics. As we kind of wind down here, I had some quick hitters to throw at you. This was not on the notes that I had sent you initially, but it was something you said earlier reminded me, I should ask you this, because Mannix and I have been debating this fiercely, and I won't tell you which side I'm on. Should the Boston Celtics be starting their newly acquired Malcolm Brogdon next to Marcus Smart, or should they be bringing Brogdon off the bench as sixth man?
Oh, I really like Big men. I really like six men that can score. If we talk about Colin Sexton, you'll hear what I have to say about that. I think that's such an energy jolt. Jordan Poole made a difference for Golden State in the postseason when they needed something scoring off the bench. But I also think they should try some things. One of the things I like about Coach Udoka, my favorite coaches, Ty Lue right now is like my favorite guy. I didn't love him as a player. I love him as a coach. Nick Nurse, Eric Spoelstra. I like guys who understand the 82 game season can really be a great laboratory. So play with it and see. We can guess that he's better off the bench. We can guess he's better off starting. You should try it both ways. You might not have a choice anyway with injuries. I think he can really score as a sixth man. I think he can really score. And I love that for the postseason, but you're allowed to play with it and see which works best. I also think he's a lot like Smart as a decision maker. He's got to get better. He's an amazing man. He has that nickname that I think the president for the reason, whatever, but yes. He's not, a true quarterback the way like Drew Holiday is, but I'd play with it and see how it fits.
Yeah. I bring it up only because, and granted, not all of their turnover issues were Smart's problem.
Right.
But I was mindful of others in the NBA who made the point that the Celtics don't have that prototypical point guard to organize them and settle them down, all that stuff, especially in crunch time. And that maybe fed into a lot of their getting ISO heavy and their turnovers and just forced shots and that kind of stuff. And I would thought, well, Brogdon has a little bit longer run. Maybe he's not the prototypical point guard either, but has a longer run, more experience in this role. Smart is still evolving in that and did a nice job this past season. But my thought has been Brogdon as the primary ball handler might give them a better organized, less frantic offense. And it doesn't mean he has to start. Maybe it's because he's going to finish. And that's the thing. You bring in Brogdon. Yeah. I got to think that Brogdon and Smart are both on the court in crunch time with Tatum, Brown, and probably Robert Williams. So I don't know. Is there a decent logic to what I'm just saying there, that the idea is maybe that Brogdon should be the primary playmaker when it matters most?
Well, for sure, that's good logic. But I'm going to push back on this a little bit. It's not Marcus Smart's fault that Jason Tatum kept driving in 11 guys.
Mannix is going to love you for this, by the way. Mannix is just going to dunk all over me on the next podcast.
No, I'm just saying. I criticize Marcus Smart. I criticize the Celtics. They had so many careless mistakes. Again, I think if Jason Tatum could skip the Heat series and they win the series, I think the Boston Celtics are champs now. My brother is a radiologist down there for the Heat. Like, he goes to all the games. That Jason Tatum was unbelievable. He was not the same guy. And I love Andrew Wiggins, but it's not Andrew Wiggins as much as it was Tatum ran out of gas. We see it all the time, guys running out of gas. And so I think Brogdon can incrementally get their turnover rate down? Sure. I don't think it matters whether he starts or not. I think Tatum and Brown got to do a better job of not just being a better ball handler, but when to attack, where to attack, how to attack. They've got to be more disciplined. And Ime talked about it all year. When they got off the ball early, they were better. When they held the ball just a little, one beat too late, they tend to turn the ball over more. And just remember that all these games are reference points. It informs your offseason. So that's going back real quick to Minnesota. Anthony Edwards will get better because he's going to be exposed more to playoff basketball, which will inform his off seasons. He turns 21 before the season starts. He's a young player. He could be a sophomore. My son is 21. He just finished his second year of college. He just turned 21. They are the same age, basically. This is a young man. The more playoff games you get, the more informed you have for reference points for the off season, the quicker you can make that next jump. So Boston's going to get better. Tatum and Brown have done a lot already. They should continue to get better with what happened this offseason.
All right, a couple quick ones before I let you go. Because you mentioned Sexton, and he was on my list of guys to throw at you. As yet unsigned as we record this, restricted free agent with the Cavs. I wondered last year whether some of their success was that they just simply simplified by no choice of their own. Sexton was out. And now it's like, okay, we're about Darius Garland. Like, and for a while there was a little bit of push and pull with two young guards who both like having the ball in their hands. I think sometimes teams are better off when their hand is forced, and they're forced to simplify, and they didn't have to make the choice. It was made for them. And Garland has this phenomenal breakout year. Does Sexton still make sense there? You mentioned the idea of sixth man. My experience again in this league is that guys at that talent level and age don't accept being a sixth man that early in their career very often. They usually push back against that. They still think they're a star somewhere. And until proven otherwise, they're not going to volunteer to be somebody's sixth man. Make sense of all of that for me for a minute.
Yeah, I that's where culture comes in. There, a conversation needs to be had with him, maybe his agent too, but certainly him. We're trying to win a championship. We think we've got one of the best young players in the world in Evan Mobley. We've got an all-star center who seems to be getting better. We have an all-star point guard who seems to be getting better. He's very young. Your best role for us is to back up him or start if he's out, which he's going to be out. We're going to sit him out 15 games or so this year so he doesn't die of exhaustion in the postseason. And in those games, you'll start a point guard. If he's healthy, the other ones, you'll come off the bench, which is where you'll be. We want you to compete for a sixth man of the year. We're going to finish games with you and Darius together, which we can. We got to make sure we have a plus three on defense because we already have Mobley and Jared Allen are very much pluses on at the four and five spot. You can get away with two small guards with those, you know, three high level defenders at the other three positions with a good scheme. And if he says, you know what, I just don't feel you, you tell him, okay, we're going to trade you to a dumb team that loses 40, 50, 60 games a year. And you can go start for those teams. We're going to trade you. We're going to pay you. We're not going to lose you, but you won't be playing for us. If that's not the role you want, we understand it. No hard feelings. You're gone. That's exactly what I would do.
Interesting. I have no insight as to where things stand with that right now, but I have to imagine that this is not a simple contractual conversation that they're having with Sexton's representation, that this is about all these other things that you and I are talking about, Coach, that it is about role. It is about opportunity. It is about fit and chemistry and all these other things. And yes, certainly he could go get an offer somewhere and then force them to match or let him walk. Free agent pool isn't, or the market isn't great right now, given cap space and all that stuff. And maybe he ends up going somewhere in a sign and trade. But I have to believe that these are the issues that they're talking about as much. I don't want to say if not more than, but as much as the money issues, the contract issues.
I agree.
All right, last thing. Just wide open, either a below the radar move so far that you really loved, or just your overall favorite acquisition so far on the radar, below the radar, near a radar, and anything in those categories of the last week. What have you seen so far that's leapt out?
Yeah, I got two. My favorite acquisition is Dante DiVincenzo.
To the Warriors.
My inside info has that he is incredibly tough guy, really can shoot it, is not fully recovered from his injury. And I think Golden State doesn't have an excellent medical staff from what I'm told. I've never dealt with them. I'm not an athlete anymore. And I think that the Kings are just a terrible franchise. That might change, but hasn't, you know, you get kind of rotten just because you're connected to them. But I think the Warriors are going to love him up and coach him up. And I think he's going to be really, really good for them. And has got some championship pedigree with both Villanova and Milwaukee. Although he was hurt that last year, he's got a ton of playoff experience. And then the below the radar one is a personal one for me. I'm friendly with a young man in Thomas Bryant. Hmm. And Thomas Bryant, who's coming off ACL tear, is one of the best shooting bigs we have in the league, who was bad on defense, but was young and had never really been coached, in my opinion, well. He's in Washington after a year off. He starts playing for the Wizards. I paid attention to his games. If you follow his defensive ratings, you saw them go down, which is a good thing. You want your numbers to go down. And then he traded for Porzingis, and you basically never saw him again. He struggled to shoot the ball. From what I understand, he was still recovering from, you know, his legs were completely imbalanced. I think he had one 5-on-5 practice before he started playing the games after being out a year.
Wow.
So knowing what I know about him as an offensive player and as an improving defensive player that's got a great attitude, he lives in L.A. I heard he was on a Selling Sunset episode, buying a home there, selling a home and buying it. He's when I've talked to him, he's a delightful young man who is going to be, I mean, I thought he was a $20 million player before he got hurt, potentially, because he was growing into that kind of, I mean, we all talk about the guy who can shoot the three and protect the rim. There's very few of them. He has a chance to be close to that. He doesn't have to be great on defense. He has to be good. He is a super skilled offensive player. And also, I know LeBron hates young players because they tend to mess up a lot. This guy's a people pleaser, a coach pleaser. He is not arrogant. I think he's going to be a great fit for them.
Still young, turns 25 later this month. So, and you know, obviously the Lakers, they needed size. They need to take some chances. He seems like a great bet for them.
Pelinka drafted him. So he feels already Rob knows him and vice versa. Thomas, I've talked to Thomas since that happened. He's home. He's home. I think I just watch when we talk about most improved player, you know, come January, February, I would be surprised if he's not on the list. That's how strongly I feel about him.
And he was having some, he had a nice run there for a little bit in Washington. I'm trying to remember which season it was, but right before the ACL. He was looking good before the ACL.
Absolutely.
And ACL is not a death knell in this league anymore. We've seen plenty of guys come
back.
It
takes a year and a half or so.
Exactly. And that's the funny thing, right? People say, oh, well, you can come back in a year or maybe even 10 months. But if you ask the orthopedists and the trainers, they'll tell you, no, yes, you can, but it's 18 to 24 months that's before exactly you're right. you again. So his best is still potentially out there. So, Coach, this has been great. Appreciate it. Thanks so much. Glad we got a chance to finally do this again. It had been way too long. That's on me. I know I will not see you in Vegas for Summer League, so congrats to you for not having to be in the 170-degree heat. But I will go hit Lotus of Siam in your honor.
I am envious of that and only that. Please be safe out there, Howard, okay?
Will do. Appreciate you. Thanks. Okay, that's it for today's show. My thanks again to David Thorpe. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Shelby Royston. And thank you all for listening. Remember, you can hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday on The Crossover with all the latest NBA chatter. And then on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. And hit me with all your feedback on Twitter, at Howard Beck.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.